السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله وحده، والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. الحمد لله وحده، والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. الحمد لله وحده، والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله. قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون. وقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: وأنتم الأعلون إن كنتم مؤمنين. صدق الله العظيم. Ulama Ikram, most respected brothers and also our sisters at the madrasa and those listening over receivers. A few weeks ago we were discussing Muslim ki bedari by Hazrat Khwaja Azizul Hasan Majzoob Rahmatullah Ali, in which we had discussed some aspects of the state of the Ummah today. How the presidents of the countries, they give speeches and they say what is the state of the nation. They give address to the nation. So like that he was talking about the state of the Ummah. And although this was said many, many years ago, but it is very, very relevant to our times, that wherever you look, in whichever direction you look, there's nothing but wars, battles, fights, arguments, quarrels, murders, killings, rape, arson, looting. Which sin is not being committed under the sun? And who can say that he is enjoying a life of true peace and happiness and contentment? In whichever direction you look, you will find nothing but restlessness. Restlessness. With all the wealth of the world, the person is restless. Some people are directly affected, and some people are indirectly affected by that restlessness. If a person has got in his family someone who is suffering that restlessness because of his sins, some people can suffer disasters, difficulties, hardships, problems, but that is not because of their sins. It is for elevation of their status or for high positions in Jannat, or it's a test of their sabr. Then the people of that house and the people of that family, they are not going to experience any kind of restlessness because of the restlessness of that person. But where the person has become restless, full of anxieties, worries, because of the sins, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has made his heart restless. No sukoon in his life, no chain in his life. As my Murshid Tamad Barakatum, he says, that rain mein chain nahi, chain Allah ki yaad mein hai. In rain you don't have chain. Those are things of this world, material things. It is a ni'mat of Allah Ta'ala, a bounty of Allah Ta'ala, and we must make qadar of it, we must show appreciation, we must use it. Allah Ta'ala has created everything for our benefit. But the person will not find chain in it. He is not going to find peace in it. He is not going to find sukoon in his heart. That will only come in obedience to Allah Ta'ala if he uses it correctly. If he acquires it properly and uses it correctly, then he will get peace of mind. So he was discussing that throughout the world this is the state. Jis taraf dekho chadi hai jang, qatl aam hai. Har jaga mehshar bapa hai, shor hai, kohram hai. کیوں نہ ہو نا حق شناسی کا یہی انجام ہے امن عالم کا جو ضامن ہے تو بس اسلام ہے. So we are discussing that it is only Islam that can give the whole of mankind peace, happiness, contentment, satisfaction. People have returned from Hajj. Up till now, I always say that up till now, which is more than 1400 years from the time that Rasul Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam made Hijrat, much more than that. But still up till now, if a person goes to Makkah Sharif, Madina Sharif, he sees the effects of that peace and tranquility and sukoon and that security which prevailed in the time of Rasul Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, when he brought about a total reformation and change in the lives of the companions. Up till today we see it. Because no country in the world can you go to where they display their rands, dollars, pounds and all the different currencies and they exchange over the counter and there's no security there. There's no person standing there with a gun and there's no hijack. Try that out in our main street or one side street also. Just display all the currency and see what happens. So after all the fitnas that have entered Makkah Sharif, Madina Sharif, and whatever damage the TV and the movies have done, and so much of crime has come into Makkah Sharif and Madina Sharif, but still after 1426-27 years, but still the person sees the effects of what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam implemented. What he implemented. You can see the effects of that up till now. So Islam is the only deen that can give this peace. All the other religions and faiths, they believe in some kind of a God. A few rituals, a few practices, please the God in a few rituals and finish. Which other deen is there that deals with every aspect of a person's life and builds up that God consciousness, Allah consciousness? Allah is watching, Allah is knowing, Allah Ta'ala is all listening. He's hearing everything. That's the only thing. Nothing else can change the condition. I've said many times, you can keep on increasing the police force, keep on increasing. But you will have to have another police force to police that police force for corruption. And then you will have to have another police force for that corruption squad. That anti-corruption squad will require another anti-corruption squad. Because they will be corrupt too. Because the hearts haven't changed. So bribes will do the job. So you cannot change the conditions. The conditions will only change when the person becomes conscious of the akhirat. So all the Nabis of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, their effort was belief in the all-seeing, all-hearing, all-knowing Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, all-powerful, almighty, omnipotent, omnipresent Allah ta'ala. And then day of judgment and life after death. These were the three things that changed the conditions. Then you can leave billions in a person's care as amanat and the person will not touch 1 cent from there. Because he's conscious, my Allah is watching. Then there is no question of crime. How many polices did we have in those days? Everyone was his own police. His conscience was his police. So everywhere in the world he says, this is the state. But the sad part is that those who were supposed to give them some kind of direction and take them out from the darkness and bring them into light, they themselves are in darkness. We ourselves are in darkness. We don't have those that akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Our dealings are not the dealings of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, or as he dealt. No honesty, no truthfulness. No one can be trusted for anything today. Our words carry no weight. Our signatures carry no weight. Our qasams carry no weight. So then how can you expect a change? There is absolutely no trust. So throughout the world he says this is the state. But those people, the Muslims, the believers who had the Quran and the Sunnah, They don't know what is in the Quran, what is in the Sunnah. Their actions are no more the actions that a true Muslim should have. So how do you expect a change? Muslim has to build up two kinds of relationships. One is with his creator, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, and the other is with the creation. As far as the relationship with Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is concerned, some people have succeeded to some extent in that, because they said that the best way to obey Allah Ta'ala is to leave the society, leave the cities, leave the towns, leave the country, go away somewhere, go on to a mountain top, or go to a jungle, go into a forest, and go and pass your time there, live all your life there. So some people thought that that was the way that you can build a good relationship with Allah Ta'ala. No wife, no children, no business, go and eat the fruit of the trees, or go and hunt some animals, and pass your time. Now how many people can live a life like that? And that is not what a Muslim was supposed to be. A Muslim doesn't run away from society. He doesn't run away from people. He doesn't divorce his wife and children and his business and everything else. A Muslim is one who lives in society. But, as you have heard many times, dunya ke mashghalon mein bhi wo ba khuda rahe. Wo sab ke saath reh ke bhi sab se juda rahe. That is the difficulty. We can be amongst a billion Muslims, and yet our heart can be with one Allah. The person is alone amongst a billion. Amongst a million also is alone. His seclusion can be even amongst the people. His solitude he enjoys when his heart is connected with Allah Ta'ala. Now his smile is for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. His laugh and joke is for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. His eating and drinking is for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Or everything as ordered and instructed. How simple and practical Islam is. Doesn't say you must run away. So those who fear society and they say, no, we must run away from society. How can you run away from society? Person will have to live in society. But we have to bring about that change. And within our homes especially, there is no government or there is nobody that's forcing us there that we must indulge in all those harams. Which government forces us? But we're not prepared to change that. We should have taken lessons from the Qurbani which we did. How many of us did Qurbanis? Millions of Muslims around the globe did Qurbani. Millions of animals were slaughtered. Millions of animals gave their lives. They made Qurban of their lives. But how much of Qurb did we get through those Qurbanis of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala? How much of Qurb did we get? How much of closeness did we get? How much of lesson did we take? It was easy to say 10 animals from my side, 20 animals from my side. Where you want to slaughter amongst the poor and the needy in which country? Take 1,000 from my side. That was easy. But how many of us were prepared to put that knife over our egos, over our evil passions and desires? The whole purpose of Shariat, what was Shariat therefore? Allama Shatibi Rahmatullah Alayhi was a great Maliki Alim, a very great scholar. And he wrote many, many books. And the scholars of Hadith use his books. And in Fiqh also. So he has a Kitab al-Ittisam. And in there he says that, إِنَّ الشَّرِيَةَ مَوْضُوَةٌ لِإِخْرَاجِ الْمُكَلَّفِ. Why was Shariat mawzu? Why was it made? What was the purpose of Sharia? The purpose of Sharia is, لإخراج المكلف عن داعية هوا حتى يكون عبدا لله اختيارا كما هو عبد الله استرارا أو كما قال, as he has stated, the meaning of which is this, that Shariat, the purpose of Shariat, the purpose of Islam and Deen and Sharia is to take a person who is mukallaf, every believer who is of age. Now all those ahkam of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala are directed at him. So to take this person out from his worship of his passions, from his worship of his desires, evil desires, from his disobedience to Allah Ta'ala and his Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Because the nafs pulls in that direction. So to take him out from that and to make him a slave of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Ikhtiyaran, just as this person is a slave istiraran of Allah Ta'ala. That means if Allah Ta'ala decides that this person must fall sick, then he will fall sick. If Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala has decided to shake the ground beneath the feet of that person, then that person has to suffer the consequences of that, whether he likes it or not. And all other matters, if you have to look at the universe and everything that Allah Ta'ala has created in there, the person has to accept whatever conditions come. Istiraran, he is forced to accept. Even in the body we will find that everything is functioning according to the will of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. He cannot ask the eyes to begin to hear and listen. He cannot tell the ears that now I want you to see. The heart will do its work. The liver, lung, everything has got its own function. So istiraran, he has accepted Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. All those things where he cannot do otherwise, there is no option, there's no choice, he has no willpower. And there are so many things like that in a person's life where he doesn't have any choice. Istiraran, he has to accept. So just like that, ikhtiyaran also he must accept Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's deen and sharia, Quran and sunnah. Be obedient to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala with his own will. And Allah Ta'ala has given him direction, this is halal, this is haram, this is the road that leads to Jannah, this road leads to hellfire. So now he must use this willpower and choose the right direction and make an effort in that direction. So Sharia tries to pull him and drag him and put him onto that direction for his own benefit. So he was discussing this state of the Ummah. And then he said that wherever you look, people are fighting for what? For wealth, for property, for gold, for silver, for oil wells. What else are they fighting for? For name, for fame, for post, for position. And there's so much of fights that's going on that I come from a better family than your family. I hail from a village that is more reputed than your village. I come from here and I come from there. Everybody wants name, fame. My car is better than yours. My home is better than yours. My clothes are better than yours. My children are better than yours. Everything, the person just wants to be recognized. And because of that, there's so much of fights and quarrels and arguments. So he said, now who is going to take them out from all this type of evils and bring them into light? So we discussed that to some extent or at length. Now we go ahead. Oh, we stopped where he said, Saazo sama dushmano ka saato go mafqood hai. Saazo sama dushmano ka saato go mafqood hai. Tere paas iman si anmol shay maujood hai. He said, you may not have that kind of ammunition, you may not have that kind of missiles and war equipment and radars and helicopters and bombs and everything else that your enemies have. You may not be so advanced, but there is something that you have which they don't have, and that is iman. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's assistance, his help is with iman and amal-e-salih. Then if the person has even a little ammunition and a small force, they are not in the majority, then to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala will give them victory. It doesn't mean that you don't make use of those forces or that ammunition. That is the duty of a Muslim. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, I have mentioned many times that no one has had, or no one could have had more tawakkul, more trust, more faith in Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala than he. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, who could have had more trust than him? No one could have had more tawakkul than him. But yet, after having seen in the battle of Badr, thousands of angels descending and assisting the Muslims, and victory came for the Muslims, although they were just 313. So after having seen the angels come and assist, and we all know the strength of the angels, just one angel as a Jibreel alayhi salatu wasalam, what strength and what power Allah Ta'ala gave to him. So after having seen the angels, yet when it came to the battle of Uhud, again Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is preparing the army. He himself putting coat of arms, taking the sword, leading the army, going into the battle. Whatever preparation was required, he did not say that angels came in the battle of Badr, so my dear sahabas and companions, now you don't have to worry, we all will sit in the masjid and make dua, and the battle will be won. And if he had done that, it would still have been won. But he showed that this is the world in which an effort has to be made. There has to be that effort. You make use of the means, but you don't trust in those means. The 300 munafiqeen, they turned around. So they were left with only 700. But yet Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala assisted them and helped them, although the kuffar were 3,000 strong. And in every battle you will see that Muslims were always in the minority. So he says, you don't have to worry about that majority, minority business. As long as you got iman, you got tawakkul in Allah Ta'ala, then Allah Ta'ala will give you victory.
وعدہِ غلبہِ مؤمن کے لیے قرآن میں وعدہِ غلبہِ مؤمن کے لیے قرآن میں وعدہِ غلبہِ مؤمن کے لیے قرآن میں
اللہ تعالیٰ has promised dominance, victory, success for the مؤمن پھر جو تو غالب نہیں کچھ ہے کسر تیرے ایمان میں. If you are still not becoming dominant, then there is a weakness in your iman. Otherwise Allah Ta'ala has promised that you will become dominant. But if you have iman, and that iman does not mean just the performance of 5 times salat. Iman includes everything, Quran and Sunnah, to make amal on that.
ہو جو ایمان کا اثر اعضاء میں دل میں جان میں ہو جو ایمان کا اثر اعضاء میں دل میں جان میں.
That iman is a thing of the heart. We cannot show our heart to anybody. Iman is something that is in the heart. Now how are you going to show that I've got iman in my heart? The effect of that iman will be seen in our body, in our parts of our body, in our eyes, in our hands, in our feet, in our dealings, in our salat, in our zakat, in our relationship with people. That is where you're going to see whether there is that iman in the heart. Claim everybody can make, bold claim, loud claim. But whether there is true iman, genuine iman, solid iman in the heart, that you will only see in the actions. That is why Islam is something that you see in the person's practice. Iman is something that is to do with the heart. So he says, if you're going to have this iman, or the effect of that iman is going to be seen in your actions, in your deeds, so then Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will give you victory.
Phir wohi akhlaq islami jo hum mein aam ho پھر ہے ناممکن ہم اپنے کام میں ناکام ہو.
It's impossible that you will fail if only we get that akhlaq of a Muslim once again in our lives. This is our cry, that we are far, far away from akhlaq. We may be making some namaz, some zikr, some tilawat, but we just cannot subdue our anger. We cannot subdue our anger. Anger is a very good thing. Without anger, the person cannot make jihad also. But we are always giving vent to our anger because of our nafs. Our nafs just cannot tolerate anything of Islam or any person who just tramples a little on our toes and finish. Or most of the time it is unjustified anger. Unjustified. So if we are not going to have the akhlaq of Rasulullah in our lives, then how do we expect a change? It is very easy to listen to everything and to make bold claims and loud claims. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's akhlaq is what drew the people towards Islam. Look at the history of Islam. Read the history of Islam. How many people were won by sword? If a person has to be brought into Islam by a sword, how long will that last? If a person puts a gun to somebody's head and says, read the kalima, otherwise I will shoot you. So now the person read the kalima. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. So like that we put the gun on 10,000 people's head and made them accept Islam. So 10,000 people came into Islam by putting the gun at their heads and telling them that if you don't read the kalima, we're going to shoot you. Or 100,000, or say 10 million people, or billion people, we put the guns at their heads and brought them into Islam. So how long will that Islam last? You cannot stand there with a gun all the time. The person cannot stand with that gun at the person's head all the time, that now that you have accepted Islam, now the gun will remain on your head. You can't do that. That person is then going to go to his house, you are going to go to your house. So when he goes home, then he tells his wife, you know what, that person put a gun to my head and said, I must read kalima, la ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, and accept Islam. So fearing my life, I read it. But to tell you the truth, I don't believe in it. That's all he's going to do. I mean, what does he have to do? Nothing. All he has to do is just come home and tell them that I don't believe in it. So if people had come into Islam due to sword, then they would all have left Islam the moment the sword was moved out of their necks. So it was not the sword that brought them into Islam. Which sword brought Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu into Islam? Which sword brought Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu into Islam? Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu took the sword to go and assassinate Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. So which sword brought him into Islam? Which sword brought Hazrat Usman and Hazrat Ali radiallahu anhu and the hundreds of thousands around the globe, how many of them accepted Islam? Which sword brought them? Which gun brought them? So it is the akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the character of the sahabas, their honesty, their charities, their trustworthiness, their compassion, their kindness, their feeling, their lack of selfishness. There was no selfishness in them. Each and everyone had a concern for the other. Everyone was concerned. There was no happiness at the destruction of anyone. No happiness and joy if any person suffered any kind of calamity or disaster. Today parents sometimes celebrate if the sons and the children have to suffer some kind of disaster because those children have rejected those parents. Or the other way around. So many people, brothers, sisters, family members, friends, there is no such thing as ikhlas left in the muhabbat also. So the sahaba ikram radiyallahu anhum ajma'in, their sincerity, their salat, their compassion, their kindness, their mercy, their forgiveness, their tolerance. Now those were the things that attracted people towards Islam. So many incidents there are. The books of history are filled. So many incidents. Even those who were judges, those were qazis in the time, in those times, they too, their judgments. So the qazi from his position of being a judge, he was bringing people into Islam by his fair judgments and fair rulings. People were coming into Islam. The business people, they were bringing people into Islam by their revelation of whatever defect there may have been in that article. They revealed it. They said, this is the defect. They never hid. They didn't believe in hiding any defect. Then again, if there was a promise, the fulfillment of that promise. If there was an agreement, then abiding by the terms of that agreement. Everything was perfect. Now these were the things that attracted the disbelievers towards Islam. That look at this person. His trading lifestyle is totally different. We can trust him. We can trade with him. He's not going to cheat, he's not going to deceive us. But when the Muslim also gave up those characteristics, so then we find people running away from Islam. They are so afraid to deal with a Muslim today. They say trade with others but not with Muslims. So it is our akhlaq which will bring people back into Islam. So phir wahi akhlaq-e-islami jo hum mein aam ho. If we again start getting that akhlaq of a Muslim into us, phir hai na mumkin hum apne kaam mein nakaam ho. اب نہ وہ صورت ہے نہ وہ سیرت نہ وہ اخلاق ہے نائدہ وہ صورت نہ سیرت. The person has to look at our attire, if he has to look at our faces, if he has to look at our features, then too he cannot recognize us. And our اخلاق also does not make the person recognize us. So then how do you expect to change the conditions? A Muslim was recognized by his libas also, by his dressing also. We don't say that there was a fixed pattern that it must be exactly like this. Nobody can claim. And this is why we must be very careful. Sometimes people go on to extremes and they don't know what they are saying. Rasul-e-Pak's time, the Sahaba-e-Kiram went into different lands. So they followed the basic principles of libas, of dressing. They did not pressurize and force people to wear exactly a certain length and exactly a certain cut of the garment. In different countries they went. They came to Africa, they went to China, they went everywhere. But that pattern of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam's dress, we will find it there. But to say that exactly, if a person has to say that my kurta is exactly cut like Rasul-e-Pak's, can anybody claim that? Did he have this kind of buttons? Did he have this kind of sleeves? Did he have this kind of collars? But all our mashayikh, all our akabir, all our buzrugs, all our pious and righteous elders, they all wear this kind of libas. So now can we say that they all are wearing un-Islamic libas? So we must not go to any extreme. What we must say is the libas of the saliheen, the dressing of the pious of that time. When the person, in whichever era the person is living, then the pious people of that time, the type of dress that they wear, so they will be wearing something by means of which they are recognized as Muslims. They are recognized as Muslims. Or it will be close to those principles laid down in the Sharia of what a person's garment should be looking like. With regards to pants, for example, that should not be below the ankles. Now that you will find in the life of every companion of Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We won't find one sahabi of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam deliberately allowing his pant to flow beneath his ankle. Why? Because Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam emphasized on that. Or when it comes to the beard, then you won't find one sahabi, not one, that would have had his beard trimmed less than a fist length. After one fist length if he trims it, but less than that, you won't find one companion. Now that shows that these were the things that were principles that governed. But when it came to other things, if somebody might have worn a lungi, somebody had sheet on his body, somebody had a kurta, somebody wore a pajama, somebody wore shalwar, different things they wore. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam himself, he purchased a shalwar. And when they asked him, Ya Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasalam, will you wear this? He said, yes, in safar and in hazar. Because he was always wearing a lungi. He used to tie one sheet. But he said, yes, I will wear it. He purchased it also. But he passed away before having had the opportunity to wear it. But he said that I find it that it covers the satar better. So now from there they prove that we can wear it. There's nothing wrong if the person has got, for example, a pant he's wearing. But as long as it is above the ankles, and in his dress he is recognized with his beard, with his topi or something, that this is a Muslim. How many times I have said that, how sad it is, how it hurts that when you pass a Muslim and you don't know whether you must greet him or not, because you haven't recognized him. And he knows that you are a Muslim because he recognizes you. And then he complains that look at these people in kurtas and in topis and in dhadis, but they are so arrogant and proud that they don't make salam. But how is he going to make salam when he hasn't recognized you as a Muslim? Shariat, whatever it teaches, there's so much of khair in it, so much of goodness in it. Shariat wants that every Muslim must get dua. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I mentioned, I think, in Stanger too. I said that in the morning when we take a walk, when we find a non-Muslim going past, then we say, morning. And he replies also, morning. So now what is it? It's obvious that it's morning. The sun has risen. It's bright daylight sun shining. And then we're telling him, morning. And he also says, morning. Now what is that greeting there? But he is extremely happy that the man greeted me. Now we just do that due to showing our akhlaq. There's nothing wrong with that. We mustn't have azmat of the kufr of anyone and then greet him. To have azmat of the kufr of someone, the person is a disbeliever, but because he's holding a very high position, so we got great respect in our heart for that position, and then we greet him out of great love, then there is a danger this person could even lose his iman before his death. Azmat of kufr must never come into the heart. Akhlaqan, the person just greets. Shah Abdul Ghani Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, they said there was a postman in his time, now they in Hindi and in India. So they say, adab, 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 adab arz, out of respect, like how we make salam, so they make adab. So he used to come and he used to tell us that Shah Abdul Ghani Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, adab. So he used to reply, adab. Adab, he was saying out of respect, greeting, Hazrat Shah Abdul Ghani Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. So the Shah Abdul Ghani Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi says, adab. And he says, the meaning I used to take is come, press my legs. Because in Urdu, dab means to press, and a means to come. So he says, when I used to tell him adab, so I used to take the meaning that come, press my legs. Then he used to think I greeted him. So in the greeting of a Muslim also, this dua, Allah Ta'ala keep you protected, Allah Ta'ala give you salamati, Allah Ta'ala give you salamati, protection, peace, sukoon, everything of the best, Allah Ta'ala give you in this world, in the qabr, in the akhirat, Allah Ta'ala make you cross pull sirat easily and enter into jannat without any reckoning, may you have salamati right through your journey of life. Not only good morning, only in the morning little bit goodness, and after that, whatever happens, why should I care? So the surat of a Muslim is also important. People say, what is there in surat? As long as the person has got his heart right, heart right. Yeah, the heart must be right. You mustn't worry about the outside. So if a person is going for a proposal somewhere, he's going to see a girl to put a proposal. Now she's very ugly looking and she's got all the spots of measles and chicken pox and everything else, and she doesn't have the features that the person is really looking for, but she has a very good heart. So now somebody says, no, she's got a very good heart, why don't you marry her? Will he marry? So the person looks at the outside too. As Shah Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi used to say, that it was an aeroplane and all the passengers on the plane, and it is a brand new aeroplane also, but just the tires are punctured. So will it take off? Or if we have to take a pigeon and clip its wings, and they say, well, what? We didn't really do much, we only clipped its wings, but it should take off. Will it be able to take off? So both things are required, our zahir also and our batin also. In fact, the batin is affected by the zahir. If the person wears the garment of a woman and sits at the counter every day, then you will behave like a woman. Those people who dress like women, so after that they behave like that. Or the women who dress like men, then they start behaving like that. Those who imitate and emulate and follow the film actors and actresses, then they walk like that, they talk like that, they behave like that. The outside also, the libas, the garment that the person wears, the clothes that he wears, has an effect on the heart. Why do people want to wear like a certain film actor or film actress? Why? You will find them singing after that like that same film actor. And they will imitate the walk of that actor, the talk of that actor, everything they want to imitate because of the love. So it has an effect. We can't say that the outside doesn't have any effect. But one thing is certain, that if a person's heart is right, then his outside will definitely be right. If a person's heart is right, then the outside will definitely be right. If inside his heart he has got taqwa, if he's got piety in his heart, so the effect of that taqwa will definitely make his outside also right. His features will be according to Sharia. Because he's got taqwa in his heart, so now there's no question of disobedience of Allah Ta'ala and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in his walk, in his talk, in his akhlaq, in his muasharat, in his dealings and in everything. Because he's got inside right. But it is not necessary that if a person's outside is right, then the inside will be right. That is something that of course we say that you must be cautious. That don't just go by the person's outside appearance. Many, many people have been deceived, have been misled, and have suffered great losses because they went by the outside appearance of the person. So it's not necessary that if the outside appearance is good, then definitely his inside is also good. That's not necessary. But if the inside is right, then the outside will also be right. That incident of Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu, which you have heard many, many times, it's really an eye-opener. We take it for granted that we have heard it many times. But where he was making an inquiry about somebody, and the person was claimed that, "I know the person." So he said, "How do you know him?" And the three questions that he asked him, that, "Did you trade with him? Were you his neighbor at any time? Did you travel with him?" So he said, "No, neither was I his neighbor, nor did I trade with him, nor did I travel." He said, "Then you don't know him. Perhaps you saw him in the masjid making namaz." Now what he meant is that just making namaz in the masjid, if you saw somebody, then don't go by that. Maulana Yusuf Rahmatullah Alayhi, the Amir Jamaat Tabligh from Markaz Nizamuddin, he was a great alim, and in his time the work spread through many countries. Very, very mukhlis person, sincere, great person. It is due to their ikhlas that we find the barakat of the work wherever you go. Nevertheless, so he used to say, after receiving many, many complaints, so he used to say that if you see a person in the Jamaat, then don't give him your daughter just because you saw him in the Jamaat. He says, if you see a person in the Jamaat, 40 days he spent, 4 months he spent, so just because you saw him in the Jamaat, now don't give your daughter to him. And then say that after I married my daughter to him, seeing that he was in the Jamaat, now he ill-treated my daughter and he's abusing my daughter and he's not fulfilling the rights of my daughter. Also, if you see the person in the Jamaat, then don't give him goods and don't give him loan just because you saw him in the Jamaat. He says, you must carry out your investigation as you would do under normal conditions. If a stranger had to come to you, how you would investigate and how you would find out whether the person is reliable and trustworthy or not. So that is what you must do, even though you may be seeing him many, many times in the Jamaat. Now this is coming from the top, the Amir from the Markaz. Why did he say that? Because not only in the Jamaat, even if the person is not in the Jamaat, sometimes we see him 5 times in the masjid, in namaz, we see him in the first saf, and we see him sometimes crying and shedding many, many tears in duas. And on that basis we say, no, this person must be a very pious person because we see him in the first saf. Or we see the person making hajj upon hajj. So then we say, no, this person is making hajj upon hajj, then he must be a very pious person. Or we see the person moving around all the time with some shaykh kamil, some buzruk, some wali of Allah Ta'ala going up and down, up and down. So we say, no, this person must be very, very trustworthy because we see him going to the khanqa all the time, he's going up and down. Now on that basis they gave them some loans, or they gave them cars, or they gave them, or they married their daughters to them, and afterwards they found that they had made a big mistake. When they realized that they made a big mistake, then they start blaming Sharia and Quran and Sunnah. Whereas that was the individual, he was making a mistake, it was his fault, it was his weakness. No Jamaat said that you must steal, no Khanqa said that you must steal or speak lies. So he said that don't go by the Zahir. So the point that I was bringing across is this, that if the person's batin is right, if his heart has been purified, if the person has made an effort, he has brought ikhlas into his heart, he has brought taqwa into his heart, he has brought tawakkul into his heart, he has brought qanaat and zuhd into his heart, he has brought muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala into his heart, muhabbat of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam into his heart, if the person has developed a kind of a connection and bond with Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, then there is no question of his zahir not being right. Then the effect of that batin, of that inner self, will definitely show on his zahir. In every action of his, you will find that he will be following the Quran, the Sunnah, the Sharia. He is not going to deceive, cheat, lie, commit adultery, fornication, and do all kinds of haram actions and deeds, because his batin has come right. So the effort that the Anbiya alayhimus salatu wasalam used to make was on the batin. But at the same time, they emphasized the zahir also. That the outside also goes hand in hand. But we do not say that if a person's outside is right, then definitely his inside is correct. Too many incidents there are, too many. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us all hidayat. But people are losing their faith and trust in Muslims because of their dealings, because of their lies, and because of their cheating, and because of their deceiving, and because of their false statements and false qasams and oaths. People are losing their faith and trust in Islam. And when they write to us, they say, well, I'm losing faith in Islam. I say, but why must you lose faith in Islam? Non-Muslims also do the same thing. If there are some people in kurta and dadis and amamas and topis who are doing this type of thing, if there are some, then there are many, many who are suited, booted, they're also doing the same thing. Then why you don't boot those people out? There are many of them who are suited, booted. They are not believers also. And look at the types of crime that they commit, and look at the fraudulent deals that they indulge in. But the person still deals with them. He still gets carried away by their sweet talk and their false advertising. He still gets carried away. So many people get caught by all the false advertising. But then we must not make that an excuse. That is just a response to somebody who makes an objection or criticizes. But we must think that our actions is causing a problem. We are becoming obstacles. We are standing in the path or at the door of people entering into Islam. When they look at our actions, they say, what different it is from the Muslim. So our zahir, when we have got it right, so then we must be very, very careful where we are walking, where we are sitting, in which company we are, in which place we are. Now, sometimes a person in this type of dress and he's sitting in a casino. And then what he says, no, I'm just watching, just enjoying myself, having fun. Or the person is some other totally haram place. So we must not even go to such places when we have got this type of libas and this kind of dress, because it brings about embarrassment. If Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had to be amongst us, will any person have that courage to go? If wahi was coming and he was being informed, then who would have had the courage? No one in his time even had the courage to stay away from the jama'at salat. Even the munafiqs, the hypocrites, but they couldn't stay away from the jama'at salat, because they would be recognized as the hypocrites. Unless, of course, the person had an excuse. He was sick, or he was weak, or he had some kind of sick, some kind of problem which prevented him from coming to the masjid, some genuine, legitimate problem. So then if he stayed behind, he stayed behind. But in our time, if a person comes for one salat to the masjid, or doesn't come at all, or comes only for Jummah salat, or comes only for Eid salat, then too he is a very good Muslim. As long as that person doesn't cheat, that person doesn't speak lies, that person gives a lot of charities, then we say he's an excellent Muslim, even though he doesn't make one salat. So the charities and not speaking lies and not gambling and other things are also necessary. But salat was considered to be the head, like how we have the head in the human body. It was enjoying that position in the deen of a person. But we are unconcerned. So the zahir and the batin both have to go hand in hand. But the effort, if it is made on the batin, on the inside, then automatically the zahir will come right too. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us hidayat, give us tawfiq of amal. Unfortunately, we are dealing with or living in a time of such fitnas that only Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala can protect us. People are getting caught from left, right and center, different kinds of fitnas. A person tries to escape from one fitna, he gets caught in another one. Escape from that one, he gets caught in another one. Shaitan and nafs have made everything glamorous, attracting us towards evil, towards haram, towards disobedience of Allah Ta'ala. Disobedience of Allah Ta'ala, that is what they invite us towards. And that is what is bringing about all the problems in the world. We had 2 million, 3 million hajis. And every year we have 2 million, 3 million. And over years people are going and coming, going and coming. Throughout the world people go for Hajj and return. Now if we had just one Hajj, the Hajjis of just one Hajj, 3 million, returning with the akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, or even just a percentage of those Hujjaj, there will be a revolution in the whole world. Revolution in the whole world. That is why I say the maal of Madina Sharif is not the gold, the silver, the jewelry, the radios and the TVs and the hi-fis and all the other things that people buy and bring from there. It is not haram to buy some gifts for people from there. But that is not the maal of Madina Sharif. The real maal of Madina Sharif was the akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. When the person returns from there, then a person must see that akhlaq of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. His children must say that when this person left here, he was a very abusive father. He was a father who was not making namaz, the father who was swearing and cursing and beating up my mother and doing all sorts of things. And look at how he changed and came. He brought the akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasalam. When my brother went, when my uncle went, when my parents went and others went, when they left from here, at that time they used to take interest, they used to go to the gambling den, they used to watch all the filth on the television screens. And after they have returned, look at that, what a change in the home. Now they're reading Quran Sharif, they're listening to good bayans or Naat Sharif, so Quran Sharif, Tilawat and Qiraat. And they're talking about general matters, but they are not indulging in haram. The whole atmosphere of the house has changed. And whatever weakness the was before their departure, now they came and asked everybody for maaf. They paid back to whomsoever whatever was due. That is the maal of Madina Sharif. That is the maal of Makkah Sharif. The real goods of Makkah and Madina Sharif, that is what it is. A total change and reformation comes in the person's life. Not that the person returns from there, 2 days you see him in the masjid, and after that for the next whole year you don't see him. So many people perform their hajj and come for 2-3 days in the first saf of the masjid. And after some days, then the person comes for one namaz, two namazes. And then after that you see him for Jummah salat. And then sometimes you don't see him until Eid salat. And then again when the next hajj comes, he says, Maulana, I'm going for hajj again. say, MashaAllah, Allah Ta'ala take you. We must have good hope. But the person's akhlaq doesn't change. One person tells me, Molana, every time that my boss goes for Hajj, I make dua that when he comes back, he doesn't increase our rentals. He says, because every time that he goes for Hajj, he says, I spend so much on my Hajj. So now I must recover that somewhere. So he says, that is where I make dua, that when he comes back, you know, the increase mustn't be drastic. Now what kind of Hajj? And that he must control his temper. My boss must control his temper. So every time he goes for Hajj and comes, it seems that it increases, his temper increases, his arrogance increases. Is that Hajj then? So that is not the fault of Hajj, it is the fault of the Haji. May Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala give us true understanding of Islam and make us practice on the teaching of the Quran and Sunnah so that we become an attraction for others also towards this Mubarak Deen. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa barik wa sallim. Ya Arhamar Rahimeen, Ya Akramal Akrameen, Ya Ghiyathal Mustaghithin, Ya Rahimal Masakeen. Ya Hayyu, Ya Qayyum, Bi Rahmatika Nastaghith. Oh Allah, forgive each and every one of us. Forgive our major sins, minor sins, sins that we committed knowingly or unknowingly, in the light of day or darkness of nights. Ya Allah, forgive our parents, our wives and children, our brothers and sisters in the Ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Bless us with the best of this world and the best of Akhirat. Cause the winds of Hidayat to blow throughout the continents. Bless each and every one with Iman and Islam. Bless us with the Akhlaq of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Ya Allah, make all of us honest, truthful, sincere, charitable. Bless each and every one of us with Ikhlas. Bless us with sincerity. Bless us with Taqwa in our lives. Bless us with piety. Bless us with your closeness. Bless us with such a bond with you that nafs and shaitan cannot distance us from you. Fill our hearts with the noor of hidayat, with the noor of Quran, with the noor of sunnat, with the noor of tilawat, with the noor of ibadat. Ya Allah, all those who have made hajj and they are returning, make their hajj maqbool and mabroor. Ya Allah, those who passed away in Mina, bless them with the highest stages in Jannat. Ya Allah, those whom they have left behind, give them sabr jameel, ajr azim. And those who are injured, Ya Allah, bless them with complete recovery and speedy recovery. Ya Allah, bless us with the best of dunya and the best of akhirat. Bless us all with good health, spiritual health and physical health. Those who are in financial difficulties, remove their problems with plentiful of halal rizq. Those who have no children, bless them with pious children. Those who have children, make them obedient to you and your Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and to their parents. Ya Allah, when the time of our death comes, don't let the angel of death find us in a disco, cinema, theater, gambling den or any kind of haram action. Ya Allah, when the time of our death comes, take us to Madina Tayyiba. Bless us with shahadat in Madina Tayyiba. Burial in Jannatul Baqi. Rasul e Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, all his life he made duas for us. Ya Allah, which khair he did not seek for us. Bless us with all the goodness that he asked for us. Bless our parents with that goodness, wives and children, brothers and sisters and family members with that goodness, and the entire ummah with that goodness. And from all the fitnas, fasad and corruption and mischief that he asked for protection, protect us and the entire ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Remove the difficulties, the hardships and the problems of the ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Remove the difficulties of mankind. Bless each and every one with hidayat. Ya Allah, accept our du'as with the sadqa of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. You are well aware of the desires, the good wishes and the aspirations that are in the hearts of each and every one who has raised his or her hand this part of the time. Ya Allah, fulfill all the good wishes, good desires. Unki nek murado ko pura kar de. You are well aware of the difficulties and problems that the individuals are facing. Ya Allah, remove the difficulties and problems. Unite the hearts of parents and children, husbands and wives, brothers, family members, and the ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا محمد وآله وأصحابه أجمعين برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين.